Welcome to the CWM Market Update Conference Call. My name is Jenny. I'll be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Paul Lundergan. You may begin.
Thank you very much, Jenny. Before beginning our call, I want to remind all participants that on this call we will make forward-looking statements that involve risks and uncertainties. When we will use words such as believe, expect, anticipate, will, intend, and the like, we are identifying and making forward-looking statements. Any forward-looking statements made during this presentation are subject to the safe harbor provisions of the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. All participants on the call are invited to review CWM's Form ADV, which is available at www.sec.gov. as well as on the CWM website. That's a mouthful, folks, but thank you for joining us this afternoon. We're having this impromptu call at the end of this particularly trying week. We want to provide some context and some reflection on the events that happened and also look towards the future. I would underscore before handing it over to Richard Barrett that the reason we invest people in globally diversified portfolios and we use high quality stocks and bonds, or for that matter, any investment we put you in, is for periods like this. So with that, I will hand it over to Rich.
Sure, great. Thank you, Paul, and thanks to everybody for joining us on the call. First and foremost, we hope everybody's okay, safe and healthy. The events of the last 3 weeks in the markets have been no doubt challenging for everyone, but it's the events of the last 48 hours in particular that have really taken us to a place that I don't think any of us have seen before. School closing, travel restrictions, emptied sporting events are unprecedented things and scary things. We are sensitive to all of that. As a firm and an advisor to more than 600 clients, we realize that there's a razor-thin line between being between overreacting and underreacting to news and headlines and events. Today's overreaction might very well be tomorrow's underreaction and vice versa. This is a quickly evolving situation, and we are trying to, in this call and through all of our communication, provide perspective and context about what's changing in a world that's changing very quickly. The situation of the last couple of weeks requires increased communication and dialogue. Most certainly, we are committed to that. The news media has complete control over this crisis at present. And as my note said yesterday to everybody, they are happy to feed both hysteria and panic in equal dosage. We have communicated a lot, and of course, we'll continue to do so. Our job as a firm, and mine in particular, is to advise our clients' long-term wealth plans so that they not only survive turbulent times such as these, but also get enhanced and are forward-looking and ready to participate in the opportunities and returns of tomorrow. That is our mission. Today, I wanted to talk about what we're seeing in the market, what I think is the most important thing. There's been some dramatic changes to policy that still need some work, but there's a lot going on. So let's just kind of jump in and dive in. We can talk about what's changed in the last couple of days, and more importantly, talk about where we see things playing out going forward. First and foremost, the negative effect of school closings, public transportation closing, travel restrictions, and the like are all going to adversely affect aggregate demand. There is a cost to not being open for business, and that cost is going to translate into weak second quarter growth. GDP in the second quarter is probably going to be down in the range of 2-3%, which seems like a lot, but it's proportionate, I think, to what we saw in the quarter and maybe quarter and a half immediately following 9/11. It's probably going to translate into something that looks like an unemployment rate going from the very low level of 3.5% upwards to 4. 2Q growth is going to be soft. That may leak into 3Q growth, But the solution to this policy comes in the form of this problem comes in the form of a policy response on a number of fronts. First and foremost is the healthcare response. We're not medical experts, won't pretend to be one on this call, have never done that. But certainly the system itself seems like it needs a dramatic increase in the testing kits to arrest and identify, you know, those who are exposed to this and how to appropriately deal with that. That's an issue for the federal government to work out, which I'm sure will happen in short order. The other two, I think, are areas that are much closer to our expertise, and that's both in monetary and fiscal policy. This week has seen extraordinary measures by the Federal Reserve to try to add liquidity to the system. A week ago Friday, the financial markets had adequate liquidity and were functioning normally. Bid offer spreads in corporate bonds were quite low. Option adjustment spreads in LIBOR were completely operating normally. The bond market was open for business. That all changed on Monday and has deteriorated over the last couple of days. I've noted improvements really since Thursday afternoon and into today. The Fed's started with a number of actions. Last week's rate cut of 50 basis points was largely ineffectual. It was being demanded by the bond market, but the Fed moved a week ago. This week's moves so far are two, but they are much bigger. First and foremost, it's the change in the repo rate, which is overnight lending, allowing the natural buyers and sellers of dollars overnight, which are money center institutions and global sovereign wealth funds, to function much more normally. So a week ago, the Fed's repo book was about $100 billion. That increased to $175 billion this week. We think that's going to continue to increase as the Fed tries to get liquidity back into the system. Second thing that's happened is the Fed has embarked on a $500 billion quantitative easing package targeted at across the Treasury yield curve. The Fed had been doing quantitative easing, but it was all focused on the front end. They were basically buying Treasury bills, keeping yields lower, attempting to steepen up the yield curve. We talk about steep yield curve being important all the time. But the Fed was doing QE at the front end. What changed this weekend is $500 billion. That's across the yield curve. They started today doing 30 years. They made a big announcement this morning. It's a substantial package. I think if this problem that exists in the liquidity markets continues for the next couple of weeks, they'll come back with another $500 billion. They've got more dollars than all of us combined. They have the power and the ammunition to fix the liquidity problem. I think the events of the last couple of days from a policy perspective for monetary policy is certainly better than the market felt like 3 or 4 days ago. And the way I look at that as to whether that's actually translating in, investment-grade credit spreads have come down. The bond market appears to be trading more freely and more liquid. Both the 10-year yield and 30-year yields on the Treasury curve are actually going up, which is a good thing. There's been big monetary policy put into place this week, and I think it's going to be backed up with more in the days to come. The Fed has a meeting next Wednesday. I think they're going to do a 100 basis point interest rate cut, basically taking rates to zero. I think the second thing that they're going to do is announce a $500 billion program whereby they open up the Fed funds window and allow a short-term lending facility so that credit-worthy small and medium-sized businesses are able to meet payroll, are able to roll over debt. These are credit-worthy institutions that can't be just locked out and experience a default because they happen to need to refinance their debt when the market's closed and illiquid. The Fed realizes that. They'll do a large-scale program on that. That will help probably more than anything else. That is a huge deal.
Rich, can I interrupt for a moment?
Sure.
In fact, how do they do that? How does that happen? How does a small business get the liquidity?
Sure. The way it would work is the Fed is basically a supplier of capital to money center banks, such as J.P. Morgan or Bank of America or Wells Fargo or those. What they would do is establish a system where they would act, the money center banks would act as a wholesaler. So I live in Westwood, Massachusetts, and if I ran a business in Westwood and I needed money, I'd go down to Needham Bank and become eligible and apply for the program through Needham Bank. Needham Bank would then access it through money center banks who have direct access to the Fed window. So it's a process. It's something that's probably going to take time to implement. But it will be, it's easily doable. The Fed would offer money out to the money center banks at probably 0.25% and maybe charge these businesses 3% and a 180-day loan while the world kind of calms down and gets through what it's going through now. But there'd be a, you know, I think the delay, and I think one of the frustrations of the market this week, this might be behind your question, is one of the reasons the market had a difficult week this week is that the market was looking for announcements about this type of stuff. They're looking for direction, and none was forthcoming. There's a lot of things to be worked out. You don't want to create a system that creates adverse incentives for the money center banks to somehow immediately profit from this. You want to actually enable and have a system in place where the end users, the small business, is able to apply for and receive in a reasonable period of time and prove their eligibility. You don't want to set up a system where politically it's you can't sell it because basically it's given Wall Street some sort of profit motive in a difficult time. But I think that's the mechanics behind that. I think that program would go a long way to shooting liquidity into the system where it's needed most. And the key word I said was creditworthy. You know, I've talked for a long time about energy having challenges and the like, especially high-yield levered players. That program wouldn't be set up to save 10 times levered, CCC-rated high-yield bond companies. It's being set up to save the restaurant down the street that had 200 people there last Friday night for dinner, and then this week, nobody because everybody's batting down the hatches. But I think that's days away from coming. Lastly, there'll be a fiscal response. That'll come out of Congress starting Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week. That's going to look like a delay in tax filing dates for individuals. I think April 15th now becomes July 15th. I think it comes in the form of increased unemployment benefits for those who need it. I think it comes in the form of small business loans for those who need it. I think it comes in the form of payroll tax holidays for households where the wages are below $200,000 for the remainder of this year. Those will all be sources of liquidity and will help people carry through this illiquid time. It won't really do a lot to help them from a cash flow perspective. I think the changes are going to be really targeted at the bottom third of the economy in terms of wealth and wages. We cannot let the bottom third of the economy just go through a terrible crisis and do nothing about it. That's not the job of government. But I think the process of a policy response is days, not weeks away. The quicker the response, the quicker these policy changes can go from being talked about concepts to being made announcements behind a podium to actually being made into process is hugely important to being able to be put behind us the market crisis that is going on right now. The problem is aggregate demand's going down. The solution to that problem comes in the form of policy on a number of fronts. Secondly, I want to talk about what the bond market's pricing in, because the last 3 weeks, the bond market has gone to a place lower in yield than 2007, 8, and 9, and that's not a good thing. A week ago, the 10-year Treasury went from 100 basis points down to 40 this past Monday. The 30-year Treasury went from 1.6% down to 80 basis points. That's not good. That was on the back of the Fed cutting rates, but it's also a reaction of a flight to quality, a flight to fear, a flight to buying something that you know is a risk-free asset. As I said earlier, I don't believe the bond market is pricing in with 100% probability, in my belief, of a recession. And I think the big difference that I have with the price of those securities right now is I don't believe we're going to get a full-blown, full-bore recession. I think the second quarter is difficult. I think we start to come out of this in the third quarter. And the reason that I'm probably more bullish than the bond market wants to lead is that going into this crisis, the U.S. consumer was in great shape. Despite being 11 years into a financial recovery, housing starts were just starting to go up. The second thing is labor market was very strong. Unemployment was 3.5%. Not only do these people have a job, they also are getting wage increases. Most importantly, personal balance sheets were in complete and solid order. The percentage of disposable income that was being paid on debt service, your mortgage, your rent, your car payment, what you owe on the credit card, what you own in student loans, was about 10% of disposable income. That's in line with the last 50-year average, but a dramatically different place than what the consumer looked like in 2006 and 7, when those percentages were closer to 17%. So people are coming into this in a strong financial position and are going to be able to weather the storm so long as it lasts months. I mean, that's a key distinction. What we can't control is the length of the virus. That's up to the medical experts. But coming into this, I think it's important to give credit and recognize the strength of the U.S. consumer. Events don't cause recessions. I've read a lot of things, and the financial media is just beating this to no end. But events, exogenous events in the market, do not cause a recession. You can go back to things like the Cuban Missile Crisis, Kennedy assassination, Nixon resignation, the crash of 87, the crash of long-term capital in 1998, the tragic events of 9/11, the U.S. debt downgrade in August of 2011, Brexit, and all the likes. Events do not cause recessions. What causes recessions, and what we talked about, you know, often here, countless times in the past, and always will, is recessions always happen the same way. And recessions happen because the economy overheats, euphoria gets too great, consumers spend too much and use borrowed money to do it. The Fed looks over and sees a lot of inflation, starts to raise interest rates, raises them too late. So there, you know, what it is the Fed hiking rates too late, accidentally inverting the yield curve, restricting credit. Events don't cause recessions. I don't think this is going to become a recession. The technical definition of a recession is two consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth. I think the second quarter is tough, but it's the strength of the U.S. consumer and how quickly they're going to come back that I think keeps us out of having an official recession. I also want to talk about, like, what's the market looking for? I've written several emails over the last couple of weeks that I know our advisors have shared with all of our clients. And I think I continue to believe that there's two very distinct things that the market is looking for to see some sort of light at the end of this tunnel. And the first thing is that looks like from the healthcare side, it's going to look like a plateauing level of known new virus cases. In China, and you have to make the assumption that the data is reasonably okay. I know people are, you know, saying that the data is out there is fraudulent and the like. We can only make decisions based on what we have. What happened in China is that over a period of about 15 or 18 days, it quickly ramped from zero cases where there was 100 known new cases a day, and that kind of peaked in day 16 to 18 and then plateaued out. So the virus itself isn't cured. But what's happening is that the known new cases are being offset by people actually becoming healthy. And you're actually in the last two days actually seeing in China a decline in the overall caseload. So we need more than 2 days to kind of draw a conclusion as to how long this potentially could last. But we're tracking the same information, you know, every market participant's tracking the same information to try to see where, okay, so if that was China, how does Italy look? How does Iran look? How does France look? How does Germany look? How does Japan look? How does the U.S. look? And it kind of looks like this. It looks like the known new cases in Italy and Iran are running at a faster pace than China and have not yet peaked out, but they should peak out in the next 5 to 8 days. It's just something to look at. The U.S. is actually below average, but maybe catching up in the last 24 hours or so. The big picture is, I think as we look out like 7 to 10 days, if China is like a reasonable measure as to kind of how quickly a quarantine actually worked, that in the next 7 to 10 days, the data that's coming out of the World Health Organization and the US CDC should start to show a plateauing of virus cases. And the market's going to like that. The market, without question, positively is looking for that type of data. So that is actually worth kind of thinking about. The second is what I described earlier. It's the bazooka of a monetary policy response. We've gotten some of it, and as I said, some of it so far has worked. But there's two big things coming next week. Next week's 100 basis point rate cut. Next week is a big lending package to help small to medium sized business. That will go a long way to pumping liquidity into the market. But I like what I already see out of the Fed in the last 24 hours. Investment grade spreads lower. The bond market's starting to work better. Higher yields in 10-year and 30-year treasuries. all looks like there's some healing going on to the liquidity problem that's existed for the last week. If we look at two other, you know, very difficult periods that are similar to this, the crash of 1987 and the long-term capital hedge fund collapse in 1998, both of those were like equity markets quickly went down 25 to 30%. Both of those sort of look like what we're going through right now. There was an unforeseen, out-of-the-blue event that all of a sudden caused a big problem. It took a couple of weeks to have a policy response, but the policy response got put into place. The market kind of dealt these policy response. And we've been saying in this, you know, I write emails about drops and pops and flops and retesting of the low. It's important to know that markets kind of won't believe that the policy is having an effect until it sees measurable data that actually justifies that. So it's going to be volatile for a period of time. Both in 87 and 98, the market reacted favorably to policy when it got put into place, but then it kind of goes into this show-me state for a couple of weeks where it actually goes back down to where a level that it trades at before until it really sees that there's a light out of the end of the tunnel. Healing will happen and the future will go on. I think, you know, trying to put the current situation in context of both of those situations and having a mindset that this is going to take probably 3 or 4 months of recovery is a reasonable time frame. But I think the big thing that the market's looking for is a plateauing of new virus cases and next week's announcement out of the Fed about big lower rates and a lending pattern. One question I'm getting a lot of is what are we doing here at Congress Wealth? And the simple answer is we're talking a lot to clients, we're talking a lot to the institutions that have given us their endowments, but we're in fact trading very little. When an out-of-the-blue event, such as the one of the last couple of weeks actually happens, the best thing that any investor can do when volatility spikes out of the blue is to try to keep unemotional and to be truthful, to ride it out. I am getting questions about newer accounts or people who have cash on the sidelines about, is this the bottom? Should I be buying? How can I take more risk in the portfolio? We are getting those questions. And my advice here is those are all reasonable things to be thinking about after an equity market has gone down by 25 or 30% in short order. But when you're thinking about doing that, both expectations and horizons need to be set appropriately. Your investment horizon, when you're thinking about whether to buy today or next Monday or next Thursday if it's rocky, needs to have an appropriate investment horizon. Do I believe that the equity market's going to be far higher in 5, 7, and 10 years? Absolutely, positively. I don't know where it's going to be in the next 5, 7, or 10 days. Nobody does. So as people think about introducing new capital, adding additional risk to portfolios, consolidating outside accounts, doing things like that, I think they need to really ask themselves, one, do I need that money anytime soon? Because if you do, you're probably not best to put it into the market because you don't know where it's going to be in a day or two. But also to set expectations, have a long-term horizon. It's how successful portfolios benefit situations like this, being thoughtful, being prudent, being patient, thinking about the long-term. How does this fit into my long-term plan? That's what's going to have the best chance of success. Our firm here has been in business for 12 years. Paul Lonergan, Ken Zanoni had an idea of creating a wealth management platform, and they did it and launched it in 2008. This firm has lived through 2008 and four other periods, very similar to what's happened over the last week. It always feels like this time it's different and this time it happened faster and everything like that, but there have been four times since 2011 that the market fell by 25% in short order. August of 2011, U.S. debt downgrade from AAA rated status. Market goes down by 25% in a month. August of 2015, China devalues their currency. Over a three-week period, the equity market goes down by 23%. January, February 2016, oil collapse, China's growth problems. Market goes down by 21%. October, November, December 2018, bottomed on Christmas Eve of 2018, market goes down, peak to trough by 24%. The point of that is we've been here before, and most importantly, our clients have succeeded across all of these markets because they believe and trust in our investment process. understand that having an appropriate and long-term time horizon matters most, and knows that we have constructed portfolios of quality assets. We appreciate that trust most of all, and promise that we're going to continue to earn such every single day. So with that, I want to hand it back over to Paul Lonergan. I appreciate the trust our clients have in us. We're here. You'll be hearing more from me. Paul?
Rich, that was a great synopsis of what's been going on. And, you know, as you mentioned, 2008, which was the granddaddy of all these crises, and certainly a different set of circumstances. But the people who succeeded in retrospect are the people who stuck with the plan. And those people, some of them will be on the call right now. And I think that that is the hardest thing to do, because human nature is we want to take action. We want to do something. And we're not advocating that right now, as was clear from Rich's comments. I'm going to turn it over to Ken Zanoni, and maybe, Ken, you have some closing thoughts.
Thanks, Paul. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, we dealt with this in 2008, and the mother of all financial crises, and what mattered the most was having a good, solid, long-term plan, and people who stuck with that plan certainly benefited from it. Same thing in the tech bubble of 1999, 2000, 2001, et cetera. And as we got through that, we'll get through this as well. But I want each and every one of you out there to know that our financial advisors are here to rerun cash flow analysis, to review plans that have been put in place to ensure, even in the declines that we've had that we feel are temporary, we're more than happy to sit down and kind of review those plans once again, just to make sure that all of our clients remain on track to continue to achieve their goals. So with that, we'll conclude the call. If anyone has any questions, if anyone would like to set up a time to meet, to talk over phone, to do it by a video conference, we have all of that capability. Feel free to reach out to your financial advisors, or certainly myself, Paul, or Rich. And with that, that's the conclusion of our call. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.